Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu deinem Podcast bei Yoga for More Body, Mind and Soul Awareness. Schön, dass du eingeschaltet hast. Ich bin Jessica Dieterich und zusammen mit Isabel Panther steigen wir jeden Mittwoch tiefer in die Welt von Yoga ein. Ich freue mich, heute mit dir das Interview mit Paul zu teilen. Paul ist aus England und noch vor 4 Jahren waren Yoga oder Spiritualität eher Fremdworte für ihn. Sein Fokus lag auf Geld, Drogen und Frauen. Er suchte sein Glück und seine Fülle im Außen, bis seine Seele irgendwann lauter wurde. So begab er sich vor etwa 3 Jahren auf seine spirituelle Reise. Heute ist er ausgebildeter Yoga-Lehrer und arbeitet an einer Yoga-Kollektion für Männer. Erfahre jetzt, wie du dein Leben in die Hand nehmen kannst, indem du dich von Pauls Geschichte inspirieren lässt. Das Interview ist auf Englisch. Auf YouTube kannst du das Gespräch mit Video und deutschem Untertitel anschauen. Ich wünsche dir viel Spaß beim Hören. Welcome to our podcast, this time with Paul. We met Paul at the yoga teacher training with Megan, mm-hmm. and I want to tell you a little story how we met him and what happened before we met him. Because we had that beautiful WhatsApp group before the yoga teacher training started, and I remember how Paul introduced himself, and he said like, hey guys, it's going to be so crazy, I'm gonna pack everything together, I'm gonna leave London forever, or who knows.
Yeah,
but he's going to sell his apartment and he doesn't know what will come after the yoga teacher training. And then suddenly we met him one day before the yoga teacher training started, and it was amazing, a nice meeting. And yeah. Then we were so curious about his life, like what happened, why did he wanted to do that yoga teacher training, why is he leaving his home, his apartment. And yeah, that's Paul. I'm so happy that you're here and we're doing that interview together.
Well, I'm happy to be with you guys. This is cool. This is good. It's a good, yeah, it'll be a good conversation for sure. We've had a bit of these conversations already, but yeah, there's always more. There's always more to the story once you have a chance to really sit down and discuss, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So let's start directly, very deep. The mm-hmm. first question we want you to answer is, why did you start with yoga?
Oh, I started with yoga kind of by accident, in a way. Things led to it, but yoga was the furthest thing from my mind when I went to my first class. So I had just been to my first spiritual retreat in Peru. I went and drank ayahuasca for the first time, the first 3 times. And that was kind of out of nowhere, that holiday, or that sort of, that spiritual mission. I was very much an atheist, a bit of a, I don't know, I want to say I was a macho guy, but I definitely had like a typical kind of male behavioral profile and beliefs, and certain things were very much for me and not for me, and yoga was on the not for me category. So I went to Peru, came back a little bit out of my mind, you know, very spiritually kind of aware, but not so sort of rooted back in the regular world that I was living in. And a friend of mine had, at the same time I was away, she'd gone on a holiday to Costa Rica and did her teacher training. So she came back, was absolutely in love with yoga, and said, let's go and do a class. And me not being in my right mind at the time said, yeah, let's do that. So I went along, I didn't have a clue what was going on, all the postures were in Sanskrit. And I just kind of moved around, you know, I moved around and just copied everybody, but I was like, you know, instead of vinyasas, I was belly flopping and all this like ridiculous stuff, but I was in good shape and it felt really good. And I enjoyed being with my friend, and she took me to another class after that, a hot one. And from there, I think just a little bit of a spark. I really enjoyed the physicality and the feeling, the kind of, I felt a sense of peace. Mm-hmm. And I think when I came back from Peru, I was in need of peace in my life, mm-hmm. because it was such a disruptive experience. So yoga became a bit of an addiction for me. You know, I actually sought out classes on my own. I found a local studio, which was 5 minutes from my home. I'd already been living in my home for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Didn't know this place was just down the street. And it's one of the best studios in London. So I was just everything lined up for me with regards to yoga, very, very sweetly. So I started going to that class and I was, well, that student, I was absolutely hooked. Mm. And yeah, from that point, kind of built my practice up from nothing to the point where I was doing sort of 8 to 10 classes a week, trying absolutely everything. And it really, you know, as you guys know, it just made such a huge difference, you know, physically first. Mm. At first it was like, you know, I'd love to get flexible, I'd love to get fit or more fit. But then it became the mental, the emotional side of it. I was starting to have a lot of major emotional releases after some classes. Like, you know, Shavasanas would have me left in tears. And I thought, okay, I know I'm on this kind of spiritual path now. And yoga became a huge component of that. It wasn't just an activity anymore. It was, you know, as we come to know now, it was kind of practice. It's a very, you know, important life routine. So I started to sort of build my life around a lot of what yoga was teaching me, and what I was learning about myself through it, just kind of self-discovery. And that's what's kind of led me to where we are now. So yeah, it became absolutely massive. I think looking back on it, my whole life at that point was a series of addictions, and yoga was one of the first positive ones that came my way. So as I was used to doing at the time, I threw myself completely into it. It was all I talked about. It was all I wanted to do when I wasn't, you know, wow, obligated to work and things like that. So yeah, it really overtook everything else that was important to me. And at certain points in the last 2.5 years, it was all I had. Mm-hmm. As other things started to sort of crumble and my identity got a little bit shaky, you know, I built such a strong identity for myself living and working in London. As that started to shed a little bit, those layers, yoga really emerged as something that was, you know, just central to being, really. Mm.
Yeah. Mm. One question. How many years ago did that happen? Like, mm-hmm. When did you go to Peru?
Yeah.
And then second question, who was Paul before you went to Peru?
I love the multi-part question. It's like multiple questions in one. But yeah, so I went to Peru at the end of 2016. I actually landed there just after Christmas, and went to this retreat on my own.
That's nearly 3 years ago.
Yeah, like, yeah, really, exactly. Unclient. Yeah. So I went there just as a kind of, you know, very sort of, you know, blinded tourist, and went straight to this retreat. And yeah, I was there kind of New Year's Eve and everything else. So I had the New Year in this ayahuasca retreat. And then started yoga February of 2017. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, it's been almost coming up to 3 years now, mm-hmm. Since I started practicing regularly. Who was I before? you know, not a completely different person, but significantly different. I think my personality is largely the same. As what it was. So if you met me a couple of years ago and met me today in a very kind of neutral environment, you'd see the same person. But what was driving me before emotionally, and sort of what my identity was built on, was completely different in the past. You know, I was very, very egotistical, very defensive, very intellectual. I relied on the things that helped me, you know, kind of grow up and have some success as a kid. So the more positive reinforcement I got that if I study, I do this, if I get this job, if I make this money, I kept going down that that path. And like, anything can be an addiction, and anything that is addictive can be destructive. You know, even mindfulness practice can be destructive if it's overdone and you don't have balance. So I was very out of balance, really not doing well emotionally. I was a bit of a mess, but I was very good at covering up because I had success. Mm-hmm. But the satisfaction from success was running out. So I had everything, but inside I was, as I like to say now, sort of spiritually and emotionally bankrupt. I had nothing really positive in my life that I liked, that reflected back on me. So I was always seeking something new. I was living quite messily, mm-hmm. In the background, with, you know, one thing or another, like money, drugs, alcohol, women, things were kind of coming and going, and I couldn't really find myself in it because it was all looking for self-worth in the wrong places, you know, on the outside. And, you know, that's where yoga really came in and helped. It helped me find something on the inside, by being able to kind of seek some deeper answers, you know, answers to questions I wasn't necessarily posing at the time, but things would come up and sort of need to come out. So if anything, you know, if the sort of the spiritual work I did in 2016 at the end of the year was like the catalyst for spiritual growth, the yoga was the practice that actually allowed me to walk that path and create some intention. But yeah, before that, I was an absolute mess. I was fun though. I was a fun mess. Like if you went out for a, you know, an evening with me, or you know, we had like one date, not two dates, but the first date, I was like a great guy. I was great to work with when I was on my game. I really had a lot going for me, but my overwhelming feelings about my life were quite negative. And I was definitely seeking, you know, to a degree, I was seeking kind of ways out of things. You know, I didn't want to be that person, but I was just good at it. And it's like when you don't have a way out, you just stay on the same course. And you know, it's a very kind of cultural thing as well. You know, I come from a sort of West Indian ethnic minority, and I had a lot of that pressure to succeed at all costs. And you know, being happy is optional. You know, it's not necessary. So you can get a lot done, and the higher you go, the worse you feel. And I was definitely hitting that point of, you know, maybe no return. You know, it's interesting, even after sort of finding some spirituality in me, or at least connecting to that side, and getting involved in yoga, you know, my personal life was absolutely plummeting downhill. It all got really bad. But I think I needed that juxtaposition, the contrast of like mindfulness, and also seeing all of my addictions amplify, all my behaviors, kind of my patterns get worse, so I could just get to a point where I was like, okay, you have to make a decision here, you know? Because otherwise it was all part of the cover-up, you know? I'm good at doing this, I'm good at painting a picture of a guy who, you know, knows how to live well, has good taste, has this and that, you know, buys fancy things, has a good job, can do whatever he wants, but is never happy, you know? And the never happy part was the part that I hid. And yoga wouldn't let me live a life, you know, because every time I had this kind of addiction to going to these classes and had great teachers, but 8 to 10 times a week, I was constantly confronted with the lie. And it was hitting a crescendo, because the more I resisted that lie, the worse my personal life would get, but the more yoga would draw me in. So I was just like, there was a tug of war between two versions of me, but the one on the mat was emerging as the truth, you know?
It was like the angel and the devil.
Yeah, this is it.
Like the angel of the something, yoga and the devil.
Something would really speak to me there. And it was just, the thing that spoke to me was me, but just this kind of deep inner, you know, sort of truer version, rather than the one that, you know, up here I'm always telling myself I am or am not. So when you give that voice enough room to speak, it will drown out all the nonsense that you're constantly telling yourself. So I had to, you know, I was never going to give yoga up, so it became a strive for more balance, and starting to discard some things that weren't working. But yeah, I still had to hit a bit of a rock bottom first.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes those things just have to be that way.
Probably there are a lot of people stuck in that position, and as you say, like, there's no point of return. I think there's always a point of return, so probably it's just perspective. So what would you recommend people? They are stuck in this and think like, okay, there is no point of return. What's your recommendation for people like that?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think
suffering and
if you're breathing, you know, as we kind of have learned philosophically, if you're drawing breath, you can take each moment as a rebirth, and you can build something on top of, you know, whatever you think your life has been. You can make something new in every moment, and that's hard to get your head around, but it is the truth. The thing is, it takes a lot of work to be able to sort of capitalize on that understanding. It's very fundamental, but doing the work is the most important thing. You can believe what you want, but yeah, there are multiple opportunities to kind of come out of a bad situation, and no situation's ever, you know, completely final. What would I recommend? I mean, it's little things. I don't think, you know, yoga kind of saved me, but I was going down a certain path, and I really found myself on a mat, quite surprisingly. I wouldn't say that is guaranteed to happen for everybody. I think, you know, my spiritual life is, I'm not the most spiritual person, I'll just put a disclaimer on that, but the spiritual aspect of my life is kind of what I see as who I truly am, and everything else is a bit of a social and emotional experiment that I'm going through. You know, I don't necessarily see myself as a human being, more kind of something underneath. So having that spiritual aspect to your life is really important, however you choose to create your own practice and, you know, work with intention, whether it's meditating, whether it's, you know, organized religion. I think if you believe in something bigger than you, you can find a way out, however you want to manifest that or delve into it. So, you know, that could simply be journaling, and sort of asking questions of a greater source of knowledge than you. You know, what we've all done requires a lot of investment and effort and depth. You know, the commitment level's very high. A lot of people can't afford that in life. So, yeah, I think the answer is to start with seeking, you know, answers in, dare I say, like a higher power. I think it is just recognition of you are, you know, you are the universe, but you're not the person you think you are. And I think if you can kind of get that ingrained in your head, you will seek a better answer to what your problem is somewhere. And it might be on a map. I mean, I think yoga is incredible. You know, in certain cities where I've done classes, yoga is purely physical, and there is no philosophical or spiritual element. So it depends on the flavor. But I think just having the intention to seek, you know, answers from a greater source of knowledge will give you guidance somewhere. But then you have a million things you can access. You know, it may just be, I mean, we've done everything from kind of prayer to chanting to ritual to, you know, self-study, journaling, all these things. I mean, all of these are kind of healing modalities, so there's a million ways to heal. I mean, I went through, people always kind of ask me, you know, what would you say to someone who wants to do the things you've done? I took quite an extreme path. You know, I don't think plant medicine, I never recommend it to anyone. You know, I think it is a, it's not a dangerous thing per se, but it's something to be approached with a lot of caution and respect. I was pretty desperate for some answers. And the thing is, I went there seeking answers to the wrong questions. I got the answers I needed, and that kind of, you know, realigned me. But yeah, I wouldn't recommend it. You know, yoga's easy enough. I think everyone should give it a try. You know? But yeah, whatever connects you with something deeper that's also something higher, I think that's just the place to start.
You said that there was that voice inside of you that was calling you to do yoga. Do you remember the day? What happened? What happened on that day when the voice was talking to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think we might all have something in common from our recent experience. I think we've all had a bit of a voice talking to us for a long time, and I think a lot of people do. I don't think it's unique to me in any way. But, I mean, since I was a kid, and kind of living a life one way, being very guided, you know, in a controlled way by the family I have, you know, something else was always trying to tap into me, or I was trying to tap into it. So I always had a bit of a, for a long time I thought I was a bit of a fantasist, you know, I was like one of those dreaming kids that never quite is present, because I'd always be sort of floating off somewhere and thinking, this is all going to change in a minute, somebody's going to come and get me. But I always had a sense of, I'm not really this. I couldn't define that for a long time. So yeah, it's, sorry, what was the question again? What was the moment? So the moment was there early on. I think in terms of it kind of re-emerging, like I said, that first class just lit a spark. You know, at that time I was going to the gym, I was in shape, I was doing all sorts of things, but they were very, on the surface, they were very manly. Like, me going to a yoga studio just didn't seem like something I'd ever do. Like, I remember before I went to Peru, my best friend who did the teacher training and then took me to my first class, she said to me, you know, you're very uptight, we work together, because you're very uptight and stiff, you know, you should think about meditating. And I said to her, don't worry about it, I'm fine. I was like, I'm fine, everything's good. So at that point, I resisted anything spiritual. I come from a religious family, and I really rejected the adherence to religion, or, like, you know, the doctrine of religion overrides what I thought was common sense at the time, because I grew up as more of an academic person. So, yeah, I think that first class really lit that spark, and then something in me just said, you know, go and sort of seek it for yourself. So after just two classes with a friend, feeling completely out of place, I was already on my way, went to a studio, went to a beginner's class, and just, however, like, awkward it was, I just kept showing up. And didn't feel like I belonged for a while, you know. I'm quite an achiever, so if I don't know certain things, then I will put the wall up in front of myself and be like, this isn't for me. But yeah, something was just pulling me, you know, and I gave into it. I kind of surrendered, you know, and in a spiritual sense, surrender is everything. If you want to let something in, you have to let something go, right? And at that point, I wasn't letting go of the damn thing. But yoga gave me enough of a deal, I guess, where I thought, okay, I can give into this. Because it just didn't make any sense. Like, it was really inexplicable at the time. Like, what am I doing? I remember writing on Facebook the first time I did a class, a proper class at my local studio. I wrote, it's 7 a.m. and I just did my first morning yoga class. Sorry, Dad. I was like, this is the least manly thing ever. And a lot of people made fun of it and everything else, but you know, we all enjoyed a good joke. But at that point, I was kind of, mentally, I was being very self-deprecating about it because it just didn't make sense to me, but I had to do it, you know.
Yeah,
and yeah, there was no one in the studio like me and stuff like that. So it all was really awkward, really weird, but like I said, there was just something in there that was like, this is always the right thing to do. So yeah, just stuck with it. You know, like all the best things. Yeah. You don't really make sense of it until you kind of make some progress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, you said, look, you lost the balance in your life.
Oh yeah.
And then you found yoga, which is always balanced. So it's funny that yoga brought this balance back, mm-hmm. and yoga is the indicator of balance.
Absolutely.
That's funny. Yeah. Yeah. What does yoga mean for you? Or what is...
What doesn't it mean at this point? I mean, it means so much, you know. It's, I mean, I love the practice, I love the physicality, and I've always been in love with that. Because I think as a man, quite often, depending on kind of how you grow up or the circumstances, you know, if you're living the kind of the city life that I did, your opportunities to sort of move and flow with intention are zero.
Mm.
You know, I mean, maybe you might be a good dancer and you can let yourself go at a wedding, but like, when do you really get to move in a way that your eyes are closed and you're in your body? Men aren't taught to be in their body at all, you know, and to kind of find that union, that oneness of like mind and body. It's just not there. You know, if you think about your body, it's, you've got to pump some muscle up, or you've got to be able to perform, you know, move fast or something. It's not about moving with breath or anything like that. So that you know, that aspect of physicality was huge to me. I mean, what it means to me these days, though, is more, I think it's more kind of community and mindfulness more than anything. I'm fascinated by the world of yoga, the way people interconnect. You know, our recent retreat was a huge example of like a global community coming from everywhere to do one thing.
Yeah.
And that is very tribal. And I think the world in general is moving towards people sort of finding the others and being more kind of cooperative. Because on a global scale, politically and sort of socially, it's a bit of a mess. So, the tribalism of yoga is really interesting and also a bit off-putting sometimes, but I love the community aspect of it. The fact that it builds a bridge between you and someone that is completely unlike you. And I can't think of any other scenario that enables that, as well as, you know, a yoga studio or, you know, a practice wherever you can find it. And then, yeah, the mindfulness side of it, I think it just leads to so much. It gives you access to, you know, as we study recently, philosophy, meditation, chanting, you know, breath work. It is a really kind of all-encompassing modality that just spawns a million other things that really do become your life. So it's a way of life, and a kind of gateway, a path towards mindfulness, which frankly, if you don't have that, you don't have much, you know. And I'm not sort of knocking anyone that might be living the life I used to live. That still has its virtue, but there's something missing. If you, ultimately everybody just wants to be happy, however you're choosing to get there. But if the mindfulness and the spiritual component's missing, it's going to be hard work, you know, and it will reveal itself as maybe, you know, whatever you've been doing might reveal itself as less than you thought it was when the kind of the bubble bursts. And I think my bubble was massively bursting about 3 years ago. So yeah, yoga's really been the way forward, but not any particular aspect of it. I think it's become more philosophical at this point. You know, the kind of the movement, the asana practice is really just one small step towards what yoga's really about, right? So I think it's, at this point, it represents a kind of a lifetime of study, and also a platform to give something back. You know, we've all just trained to be teachers. My practice was very personal to me, and it wasn't something I necessarily talked to people about. It was something I did, not part of who I was. So it's like having a gym membership for a while. But then it became a bit more, you know, it led the way in terms of how I looked at life, and how I looked at myself living life. So now it's, yeah, if I can do something where feel like I'm finding a gift in this and there's a platform to give something back or create something, then yeah, it's very purposeful in that regard. You know, it's giving me as much as I put in, maybe more sometimes.
So 3 years ago,
yes,
you started with yoga. So you practice yoga daily, you said.
Pretty much, yeah.
And when was the time you decided to do the yoga teacher training?
Oh, wow.
And why?
Yeah, that's interesting. So the bit of the story that's missing is for the first 2 years of this 3 year journey, while yoga was really opening my eyes up, and you know, kind of really opening the heart up as well, my personal life was just a disaster. Like, it couldn't have been worse, and it was getting worse because, like I said, yoga was asking me all the hard questions, and I didn't really want to answer. I just wanted to, like, kind of just move. Like, who cares about breathing? I just want to be good at yoga. I want to do yoga, and yoga was really doing me at that point. So I, my personal life was just horrible. I was using drugs, I was drinking, I was miserable, I was quitting jobs left, right and center, making more money than ever, throwing things just down the drain constantly. I was sleeping around, just being an absolute pig, honestly, just a disaster of a person. Losing friendships, like, I was kind of shifting here and there, but not committing to, I didn't have a vision of myself, but I was being yanked out of the person I'd really constructed. So I really built my identity from, you know, kind of a lifetime of pain, and I was very addicted to that pain because it's kind of all the worth I had. So I went at the wrong things even harder, and it was just this weird life of like yoga in the morning, yoga in the evening, and all the other bullshit in between. And it was just ugly. It was really ugly. So last year was that kind of, you know, I wouldn't call it a rock bottom out of respect to people that really had some struggles. You know, everyone's got a story, but it was, for me, it was bad. Like, for anyone that knew me, I was always quite a grounded person. Even if I wasn't the easiest to get along with and stuff, I had a strong kind of moral compass, set of values. I lived life a certain way, I was very strict. But I was starting to unravel all of that. So I was becoming a mess, very kind of, I would say almost depraved in my appetites for things. And it was really starting to intrude on my life. Like, my life was starting to fall apart. You know, work was becoming difficult for me. I wasn't showing up like I used to, and I was avoiding people and all sorts of stuff. So, yeah, last summer was a really low point where I thought, 5 months of this, maybe I'm not going to be here anymore. Wow. And I thought, you know, in that clarity, that moment of clarity, I was like, okay, you've had enough thoughts about, you know, sort of things ending. And, yeah, I just kind of saw the light there a little bit, you know, so I didn't get that bad, but I knew I was going down that path, and that scared me enough to the point where, you know, me still being quite sensible, being a mess. My friend, same friend with the yoga introduction, she was touring the Far East, and she was going for 6 months to a million countries, and just offered all of her friends, like, come and stay with me, or do this tour with me, do that part with me. So I said, can I do Indonesia? And we ended up organizing a trip, and I came to Bali last August for 2 weeks. So yeah, my birthday's in the end of July, the 27th, and that's when things were getting messy. Like, I remember on my birthday, I celebrated by having a morning, afternoon, evening of cocaine with a really dangerous prostitute. That was my celebration. That's
hopefully
how I turned.
Not in Indonesia.
No. That was in London. So that was how I turned 42. Just remarkably bad. You know, and also a lot of fun, but not the good kind. Too much of the good kind. So I did that, and then a couple of weeks later, I'm heading out to Bali to meet my friend. And I just had the best time here. Like, it was, as you know, the island's just magic. So the yoga was great. I ate super healthy, lived a really clean life, just went hiking, and just got away from the part of me that wasn't working. You know, the part that I needed to take a step away from, but didn't really know how. So this trip last year gave me the opportunity to just see things with a bit of space, have more of a perspective. So I kind of left that guy behind. And the thing that I enjoyed was I came here and I was nobody. And that was wonderful. You know, for a guy that was only his identity, stepping into kind of true sort of spiritual emptiness was fantastic. So yeah, that's what really made things move. And I went to studio here, Radiantly Alive, did a bunch of classes while I was in England for like the first week, and when I came back, they were advertising a teacher training scholarship. And I was just inspired by what yoga felt like here. Like, it really was more of what I was looking for from yoga, and it had all the aspects. So I was inspired, I got home, I applied immediately, and I didn't get it. So yeah, I did get the scholarship, and I thought, you know what, that's a good thing, because I really want this. and you know, I knew of our teacher Megan a little bit, not that well, but I liked her personality. She had done a podcast with a company that was affiliated with the company that I was running at the time, so I kind of knew of her, really liked her style, and had been following her online, and I saw that she advertised a teacher training and she was living in Bali. So I was like, if I have the patience to wait till November, instead of the Bring It Be Alive one would have been February this year. Yeah. So I thought, if I have the patience to wait, then I'll come and do this. So yeah, you know, as we all know, showed up, did it with all the sweat and tears. And, you know, it's interesting because I guess I made the decision almost, you know, just over a year ago. And applied straight away and got it and was completely overjoyed. But the actual sort of path to do the teacher training, my life really kind of changed again once I set that intention. Because it's me, you know, I don't call myself a yogi really. If I do, that's a joke. But for someone who enjoys yoga or sees it as important, teacher training wasn't really on my radar until I got back from Bali. And then I would only come to Bali to do it. But in the meantime, making that decision over the course of a year, my intention behind that teacher training really changed my life. So it was kind of, it's yoga, my decisions to do with yoga have always been a springboard for the next sort of big personal thing and that drive. So it's starting to fill in the space that's been left from all of the stuff that I've, you know, intentionally removed. So yeah, this the year towards this training has been another journey in itself. I think it's been for everybody, right? Yeah. Like it wasn't easy getting here, and I think a lot of things have shifted as we got here and then coming out of it as well. So the teacher training program wasn't a kind of, it's become a bit of a means to an end, not an outcome of its own. Yeah. Like we've all got certificates now, but I'm like my mind, my sort of scope is so much wider than it was before.
Yeah.
So yeah, it as a focal point of something to do before the end of this year, it's opened a lot of different avenues in terms of what's the next thing, because you know, getting out here and doing a month of training is no joke. It makes you think about life, right? So I've been thinking about my life for 3 years, and this gave me a really good lens, like the best one, you know, because we've really been, I mean, have we been studying yoga for a month, or have we been studying ourselves?
The question.
I mean, I'd like to think I've come out with a better understanding of, I mean, yoga is almost infinite as a body of knowledge, right? There's so much you can learn, and it's a lifetime worth of study. But yeah, I feel like I learned more about me in that space than I necessarily learned about, I mean, we learned absolutely shitload about yoga, I'm not going to lie about that, but what I learned about myself is just like light years ahead of my previous understanding.
The certificate is just like, it feels like a small part of it. The other thing around is so big.
Yeah, the certificate's proof that it wasn't a dream. Yeah. You know, because we're all still sort of landing from it. But it really delivered more than I expected. And the path to getting here has been full of decisions and changes and, you know, hope, I think. Hope about the future. It's not good to kind of live outside of the moment, but in terms of the feeling and the direction, just the last few months of getting ready to be here and thinking about everything it was gonna involve, even though my expectations were just a million miles away from what actually happened. You know, I totally underestimated it. Getting here made me really serious about what's next and what is yoga. It actually solidified what is yoga mean to me.
What was your intention when you applied for the training, and what was it?
Not to teach.
All right.
Not that I've taught. I haven't taught yet, but my intention was, I don't want to teach. I just want to be good at yoga. I want to deepen my practice. Deepen my practice.
Then what's the ego again?
Deepen my practice is what people say when they don't want to give their real answer. You know, if you live your life as a practice, then you are deepening. You don't need to go and do a training to deepen something that's already been deepened. So, I mean, it might accelerate something, but you're on that path anyway. No, but it definitely wasn't to teach. It was like, you know, this teacher is the best in the world, in my opinion. I want to be in Bali, so all these things, you know, it's all a great coincidence, and I'm going to be just, you know, better in my body and stronger. And those are all valid things, I guess, but it wasn't the full answer. And as I said to Megan as we wrapped up, you know, I wasn't thinking about being a teacher, and now I can't really think of anything else. But I did have intention to, you know, my major motivation of doing this with Megan in Bali was, you know, I have an idea for kind of a business within yoga or the industry of yoga. So I thought, this is a great start, you know. Mm-hmm. Practice, deepen the practices, as they say, and then it will lead to the next thing, without necessarily knowing how.
Mm.
It's kind of like, if I'm here and I'm doing this, then I'm going to be immersed in the world of yoga. I'm going to feel very much like somebody who makes yoga their life, you know, their living, and I'll figure it out from there. But yeah, the teaching thing as something in the middle, or, you know, a big aspect of it, wasn't really on my mind.
Mm.
I was like, I'll be with a bunch of teachers, but I'm not going to be one. And to be honest, I didn't even think about how many are going to get through this, and what are we actually going to learn? It was just, we're gonna move a lot, right?
Yeah.
I was very naive about it, super naive. So, yeah, I didn't expect as much as I should have. I think my intentions for this program were small, but maybe that was a good thing.
Mm.
I think maybe it enabled me to be a bit in the moment, because I didn't think that much about who is Megan, what's she gonna do, who am I, what am I gonna do, and what is this thing actually about. I was like, obviously we're gonna do some yoga, and the rest, you know what? I'm open.
Yeah.
And that was kind of it. Mm. Yeah. Not that I had an easy time, I was still massively fucked up, but you know what I mean? It was cool, yeah. That was it. Yeah.
No. When you... Well, you decided to go to the yoga teacher training.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened that you decided to leave London sell your apartment?
Yeah. So, a lot of things were happening. I think I knew from really the start of this three-year journey that my career, you know, kind of how I saw myself in my career, how I saw myself in my life was really beginning to shift. I held on to it to my detriment for the first 2 years. I was really like gripping onto everything a bit tighter. And as I started to realize that, you know, it didn't, not that it didn't mean much to me anymore, it just wasn't what I was supposed to be doing.
Mm.
It didn't feel like who I was.
Mm.
I was just good at it. And I think a lot of us are good at things and we survive on them. But we deny ourselves, you know, sort of the truth. We think the truth is less valuable somehow, which is insane. So I definitely had that viewpoint for a while. But as this training came closer, at first it was, I'm going to do this program. Then it was, I'm going to go and stay in Bali for 3 months and just live a good life. Then it became, as we got much closer, I was like, no, I'm going to go all in on this. Because I had the idea, after my first classes, that I'd love to make some clothing.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the two things I loved when I was a kid, or like young teenager, were like working out and fashion.
Wow.
And I was like, I never put the two things together, but I remember saying to the friend that introduced me to yoga after a few classes, I just said out of nowhere, I'd love to buy a sewing machine and make some pants. You know, I'd love to make some men's yoga pants. And I just said it and just forgot it. But it was always kind of there. It just went to the back of my mind because it sounded ridiculous. At the time I was running a media company, which has nothing to do with clothes. So, yeah, that came up again after I got accepted in March for this training.
Mm.
And as we got through the summer and everything else, it just became a thing of, it felt very undeniable that I have to give all of that a really big shot, you know, I have to go for it. And the only way to go for it was to kind of not live two lives anymore.
Yeah.
So I've been hanging on for, you know, like one life for appearances and one for my own joy and sort of peace. And I was like, I'm going to choose this one and just invest in it, you know, my kind of time and energy and my focus, and not come out here with like no kind of point of return.
Mm-hmm.
So this is my new sort of, you know, point of no return way of living life. And I still have some things behind me in London, but my mind isn't there anymore. It's very much here in the present and seeing what's happening. So it's a bit of an experiment. Like, I think any good entrepreneurial journey starts with the unknown. But there's a lot of intention behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it all happened in the last sort of 6 months as the training became a real thing. And once I got accepted and some of the thoughts in the back of my mind started to come up again, I was like, okay, it's more than opportunity. It could be actually, you know, a kind of shift in my life or stop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rather than just a chance at something. So yeah, I kind of came out here with the idea of, I'm definitely not going back the same. None of us are going back the same, but maybe I'm not really going back at all. I'm out here now. And that's a cool idea, you know, cool story, but it needs to be built. So I'm kind of here to do that work beyond the training. So kind of live, work, and everything else that comes along with it. So yeah, we'll see. That's the next chapter.
Well, yeah.
So maybe before we start and jump into the next chapter, mm-hmm. what are your like main three takeaways
yeah.
of the training? I mean, we yeah. could talk probably like for hours about the
yeah.
training.
Oh, no, for sure.
Like,
yeah.
I still haven't figured it all out. Try to break it down.
The top three things. I mean, one, it will absolutely change your life, and that cannot be overstated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not really doing it justice. I think you get into a space with not necessarily a teacher like Megan, but any teacher that you really resonate with, and the things that happen there as a result of an intensive month with a bunch of people that everyone's learning from everyone, and it is a real pressure mm-hmm. cooker, more emotionally than physically. The physical side is hard, but the emotional thing is the unexpected part. It will change your life because you just cannot be the same.
Mm.
And you can't go through it as the person who arrives at the beginning.
Mm.
You know, there's a reason why you want to go this far, but you don't really know how far you're going. Mm. So it will absolutely transform you. Second thing is, it is super, super difficult. Like, it's fun, but it's actually very painful to do. You have to be dead serious about it. Like, you know, I don't know if anyone listens to this or watches this and is like considering teacher training, get ready. Like, you can't be ready enough.
Get you
it is
ready.
Really hard. It's the hardest thing. I mean, I studied law. I had a million like hardcore advertising jobs. I lived and worked in different countries. This is the hardest thing I've ever done.
Wow.
Because it's not the money or the physical effort or the time and energy to come to a different country if you choose to do it that way. It's the giving up of, like, the giving of who you really are. That really personal, emotional, deep investment. It's the rawness. You know, you can go to university and be the student version of you. You can go to work and be the corporate version. But when you go to yoga teacher training, you have to be the real you. And nobody wants to really deal with finding out who they are. It's the hardest thing in the world. So, yeah, yoga's like, you know, showing you, it's just studying yourself, really, you know? And there's a lot of revelation in it, and that part's very tough, because I think, you know, when I went to university, there were days I didn't enjoy it, but I never wanted to pack my suitcase in the middle of the night and run away. And I'm a grown man, you know, I'm older than most of the students, and I feel like I've got my shit together, but there were times where I was like, if I left in the middle of the night with a note at the reception, hopefully they would come after me, you know? Like, you just don't want to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to like four spiritual retreats this year and got high off my ass, crying and screaming and all that stuff. And this teacher training kicked my ass.
Yeah.
As it kicked everybody's ass. In the best way,
yeah.
But it was like a tough love sort of thing. So it is incredibly hard work, and you have to really want to do it. I think if you love a certain teacher and you turn up just to kind of hang, don't bother. Don't waste mm-hmm. your time. You're not gonna get that. What you're gonna get is you're gonna have to hang out with yourself
mm-hmm.
for a month, every minute, every day, mm-hmm. looking at yourself from every angle possible, and maybe not liking what you see, but needing
yeah.
to focus on it with both, you know,
yeah.
both sort of eyes, and maybe a third cosmic one. Like, there's no running.
Mm-hmm.
There's no hiding there, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
who you really are comes out,
mm-hmm.
and some of that is the best thing you've ever seen. Some of that is something you can't stand, but you will have to deal with it. So yeah, in that way, it's the ultimate mirror. I think the third thing is the best thing you'll ever do.
Mm.
You know, as all hard work is ultimately very rewarding, it is the best thing you'll ever do. I think whether you want to teach or not, and I don't think you have to want to be a teacher to do a teacher training, but it will, with that way it changes your life and makes you deal with things, the reward ultimately is that you come out with a deeper sense of knowing, you're more connected to people, I think you're more connected to yourself in general, and it really sets you on a path. I think whatever you choose to do after that type of work is the right one for you.
Mm-hmm.
So it, you know, it opens a door to a better relationship with yourself,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the ground and the kind of the belief system that yoga provides. I think that underpins a lot of what people struggle to do in their regular life. So once you kind of have that as an asset, you have that in you, you do feel like you can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, after our training, I felt like I could run through a wall if I wanted to. Like, we were just a bit nuts, you know?
Yeah.
We were a bit kind of high on life. So, yeah, it's the hardest and the best for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
How's that?
Yeah, that was
what do you guys think? Do you agree, or?
Totally.
Yeah.
For me, I haven't expected it. I know Megan, and I know she's really deep and really spiritual.
Yeah.
So I expected it really deep and really spiritual, but not
that deep and that deep.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So and for me, I felt it's the like same, we yeah. both finished studies this year. And it's like, as you say, like you study, you can do so many things. You can mm-hmm. run through life and like don't see what happens to right and left. But you'd never study yourself actually. Mm. Like to stop, sit down, and yeah. do meditations after meditations, like with Sharada.
Yeah.
It's like. Sit down and listen to yourself and feel yourself.
Yeah.
This is like,
I mean, this
amazing.
Is it. This is it. I had enough knowledge to know it was going to be that kind of flavor. But I thought, you know, Megan's deep, you know, yoga's even deeper than her. I mean, just the sort of the body and world of yoga is limitless and you can't go deep enough. But I had been pursuing, you know, spiritual enlightenment and awareness mm-hmm. for 3 years. I went to like all these weird retreats and sanctuaries in the UK mm-hmm. and Peru. Got all the tattoos and everything. I'm like, well, I'm deep as well, right? Yeah. So we'll be fine.
Yeah. No.
Like, yeah, nothing can really prepare you for where it goes. Yeah. Because again, it all turns around and goes inside of you. And we're so undiscovered, I think. Without the really deep work, we just don't quite know. We know who we are,
mm-hmm.
but we know what we've made. We don't know what we really are, and we don't know what we're capable of. And I think the sense of capability, again, there's so much space that is in your mind and in your kind of heart after your training. That's where the limitless aspect comes in. It's like whatever you want to do, I think whatever your choice is, you could probably do anything,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you're seeing it the way you're seeing everything. You're like the way you see life is the way you see yourself, and when we're limited,
yeah.
that filter is getting in your way.
Mm-hmm.
I think the teacher training we did, and I'd imagine most of the ones out there, open you up to a point where you see yourself so purely,
mm-hmm.
all the good and the bad. You know, it doesn't sort of knock you out of all of your negativity mm-hmm. right away, but or at all, but it gives you the perspective that life feels more abundant, life feels more open mm-hmm. to you, you feel more a part of everything. Yeah. So from there, I think you get a sense of what human potential actually feels like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So beautiful.
Yeah.
I got like, you had chicken when you were telling all your takeaways.
I mean, you know, I'm not saying anything new here. I think this is very much like our teacher's story. It's the thing I've seen in all the conversations that, you know, we've had and all the other students have had. There's that sense of it everywhere. And when you see it, that kind of that glimpse of people understanding their potential in that way, you really start to believe that as a kind of foundational layer of your practices, this is what you're putting all your work into.
Mm-hmm.
I think potential is kind of one of those very loose concepts. But yeah, I think, you know, yoga ultimately is kind of about this union of everything that is sort of human and cosmic, but the revelation in all that is you understand what your potential mm-hmm. is. You know, if your mind's going to perceive any part of this after being, you know, kicked around for a month, it would be that you kind of know where you're going if you can trust it. Which is beyond belief, it's more faith, right? Like that's the thing I thought was huge, is my faith is deep and my spiritual sort of reckoning of what's around me is on a different level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm still a regular guy with vices and I'll never have like a huge ego ever again. You know, I'm really trying to avoid that. But just when you look around at stuff, you feel like you're seeing it through more than just your regular senses. You know, the yoga's given you something which feels like there's a thread from kind of head to heart,
mm-hmm.
and that's your barometer now.
Mm-hmm.
You can just energetically kind of sense your direction a bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or we're just all, you know, we haven't been out of it long enough and we're all a bit crazy. Could be that. Yeah. Who knows?
Maybe.
Yeah. Could be a bit of both.
Yeah.
Maybe we are.
Yeah.
So what comes now? Like,
that's such a great question. That's the most open question in life at the moment. I mean,
do you
like,
want another question? I mean, we can change it.
No, I'll go
but,
for it. I'll
oh,
go
yeah?
for it. Yeah,
okay.
I mean,
I can extend it.
It's one of, no, it's one of these answers that I think will, you know, it will evolve over time. So, you know, we're a few days out of the training. I'm here in Ubud. I have no short-term plan to get back to London. In the long term, I may have to go back just to do some administrative things. But at the moment I am here, we kind of, you know, sort of in a good way, nowhere to go and nothing to do. I am nobody.
Yeah.
You know, so I came with all this identity and sort of took that mask off, and now I'm just sort of, I am exactly where I am right now. What's next is hopefully, you know, the goals are we were asked to kind of write a grand vision for ourselves and then distill that into kind of the next 10 years, 5 years, and all the way down to the next few weeks. So I have plans, for sure. I think my, you know, what's next is really down to something a bit more kind of intrinsic, which I think is just, I was thinking a lot about mission in life and like, what am I actually going to stand for? What am I all about? What's my story so far led to? So, you know, what's next is kind of what has already come and, you know, been for me and what I'm turning that into. So yeah, I think my mission is kind of one about mindfulness and spreading that. And that sounds super airy-fairy. I'm a business person at the end of the day, so it's like, I want to teach. I don't see how I could get out of not teaching. I think if I don't teach, the universe is really going to give me some bitch slap. So I better teach, just because I feel like something's looking at me. Yeah, so I'm going to teach. I'm going to really start working on some clothing. Like I said, those loves were, you know, when I was young, were kind of, you know, fashion and fitness, but I never put them together. So this is an opportunity to kind of put all my loves into one thing, be part of the community. And yeah, you know, I still like success. I like spiritual success. I like success that connects me to, you know, whatever I think my values are, whatever my mission is. So these things feel quite aligned. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a hell of a ride, a lot of hard work, but that's what's next. But the time frame, I think that depends. That's where I've got to feel it out a little bit. I love setting goals and thinking I'm going to do this, do that, but sometimes I can be my own worst enemy and not enjoy the moment. So yeah, I mean, this is paradise for me, so we're spending some time in paradise. We should definitely soak it up. I know today I'm probably more likely to go and buy some jewelry than I am to like have a business meeting, but you know, you've got to sort of spread joy wherever you can and not be too crazy. So yeah, hopefully, you know, it's already coming to Christmas, over the coming like weeks and months I will be moving towards building a brand that I think really is designed to help people, and also teaching in a way that, oh, I know based on how we all learned and how we worked together, if we take what we learned and love about yoga, you know, as the, you know, the movement practice now, if we take that and teach it anywhere in the world, we are doing that. We are helping people. I mean, I've never seen, and this is going to sound a bit of an advertisement for Megan Curry teacher training, but so be it. I've never seen yoga practice in that way. I've never felt it that way. So we did something special. Like, that co-creation is just a new way of teaching us, you know? And I think 40 people could go and teach thousands of people, and then this movement culture is just shifted. Mm-hmm. And I do feel responsible for that. I think that is part of our mission, is to go and give that back somehow. Yeah. So teaching's a platform for me. The business is a platform for me. My story's going to run through all of that, you know, my philosophy, my values, my themes will be, you know, manifested in those two sort of windows, you know, being a teacher and also being an entrepreneur. We'll see where it goes. Yeah. I'll try to lead a quiet life at the same time. You know, I enjoy being nobody. I enjoy building a story, you know, from a new point through the things I'm doing rather than the things I'm telling myself. So I'll let the work speak for itself. I'll let the feedback kind of land on me. But in the meantime, I am just, no one for a change, which is cool. But wow. I have all sorts of ideas.
You are so much more than no one.
You're so inspiring. Like, the whole story. Yeah, it'd be so cool. Inspiring.
I mean, if I pull it off, it'll be a great story. You know? So it's worth a shot.
It's so inspirational.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things where, you know, I think Megan made this point as well. Don't fixate too much on outcomes. You know, when we were talking about the kind of business aspect, it was more about enjoy getting there, because that is the value. I mean, every time, I know this from my past, every time I got something, I pursued something and got it, it was an empty experience. I once went to Miami for a week last year. This is before Rock Bottom. This is on the way to kind of the bad times, but I mean, obviously my bad times look like the best times, you know, if you love Instagram. I went to Miami for a week and met a Russian watch dealer and bought a £61,000 platinum watch, and that was like the highlight of my year in February. It wasn't even my birthday, and Christmas had gone. And by the time I got home, I was like, what am I doing with this thing? I mean, as most people would, but I used to do the emptiest, like, sort of the most like low calorie or kind of high sugar shit going, and I'd just fill myself up with nonsense and think, oh yeah, this is good, and I'd get back and instantly regret it. So yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that inspiration's kind of come the hard way, you know, so it's a thing of, I don't want to get too caught up in anything at the moment. It's good to kind of, again, I call myself sort of nobody in like a tongue-in-cheek way, but the idea that you have a fresh start, you can build something, you don't have to kind of hang on to any of your previous habits, you know, I think it's probably the biggest thing I've not learned, but it's the biggest like sort of overall takeaway from the last month is that really anything's possible. That potential is real, and you can always have choice, always make a decision, and not have to refer to anything that didn't really make you happy as a basis for that decision. You can just decide in this moment.
Yeah.
You know, I think Megan really embodies that. I think we've all learned to do that, because otherwise we wouldn't have got through it. Like, you know, when everything you are or you've been is telling you, this sucks, get out of here. Something greater that isn't in the future, it's in that moment, it's who you really are, is keeping you going. You know, that sounds like super profound. It's not life or death, but it is just tough. You know, a lot of people won't run from, like, you know, a dangerous situation, but they'll run from themselves. You know, who we really are is probably the thing we're most afraid of. Unless you're, like, super enlightened. And I already shaved my beard, so I'm gonna have to get my enlightenment another way. I came to Bali and like, oh yeah, I'm in guru mode, you know. It was all crap. Yeah, I shaved that so quickly because I think I just needed to sort of show my face and find more honesty.
Oh, nice.
I needed a bit more. I needed a bit more exposure.
So inspirational, really. I'm so thankful that you're sharing all your stories, and you're so raw.
You guys inspire me, you know? Yeah, you guys inspire me. I think, you know, it's not easy to talk about these things. And we dealt with a lot while we were, you know, all together in that space. But the journey is the thing. Like, how you get there is so much more important than what you receive at the end. And I think, you know, it's always like the path to true success is quite ironic. You learn that over and over again. It's like when you don't care about the thing that everyone else cares about, the numbers or whatever, then you're limitless. You know, I remember there was a quote from someone or other where it was like, kind of, people think, you know, if you get enough money, you'll have some freedom. I've had a lot of money. It's the other way around. It's like you have to have the freedom first, the sense of it. And then if money's what you want, you can have that. If whatever you want is what you want, you'll have that. So it's when you free yourself and operate at that level of potential that you've been missing out on, then you become more abundant. Or, yeah, frankly, you just want less. Whatever you want is fine. It's just, where is it coming from? So I'm trying to enjoy creating and following this path. I'm doing it all by myself at the moment, which is super scary. It's nothing like sitting in a hotel room thinking, Christ, why am I doing? Especially when you're not actually, you know, Christian. But it just, again, that voice has been there. It's been a year, about 3 years getting to this point. So there's no point stopping now. We will just have to see. You know? I mean, at one point I was telling myself, you know, if things don't work out, I have an advertising career, I can go back. But I don't think it's even worth saying. Like, my boss at my last company, who's a really great, inspirational guy, he just said to me, don't have a plan B. If you really want to succeed in life, no plan B.
Like,
you can only go forwards. There is no backwards. You might go sideways every now and then, but like, you have to do what you think is right and just keep going. And he's a great example of that. I think Megan's a great example. You guys are all great examples. So if you don't learn that in that, you know, to that degree of exposure, then maybe you haven't learned anything. So yeah, I'm doing what I feel like doing, but not asking too many questions of myself, because I think, expectation, all that. That's a slightly older version of me operating. So yeah, just one day at a time, you know, but really with intention, like with the highest intention and being as open as possible. It's like, if something feels like it's really going to open me up and I'm going to have to be vulnerable, then I'm finding a lot of power in that. So if it makes me scared, that's what I do. And isn't that, you know, I mean, like, if you kind of follow, you know, sort of self-help, self-development online, there is a lot of that talk, and I struggle to process it. I think I had to live it for a month and be like, okay, everything you're scared of is where all the greatness is. And I am very invested in being great. You know, I still would like to be very rich and successful, but it's more on the back of having built something that gave value to people rather than I took value from people, if that makes sense. You know, I think I used to want to be like a real piranha and consume everything this world had to offer me. And now you kind of realize through practicing yogic philosophy that the world has nothing to give you. Actually, it only has the capacity to take from you. You know, you have to have that fullness, that whole and complete sense of being. So then you can develop your gifts, then you can have a platform, and then you can create an exchange of value, where you're kind of amply rewarded for whatever you're putting out there in the world with good intentions. So if my values are good and people resonate with whatever I choose to create, then I think it's the right thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What are your values?
Yeah, what are they? Honestly, like number one, I think I said it in the teacher training, was integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I do, and that's from like every little behavior, even when the doors are closed, has to really come from the heart. It has to feel like me. I definitely used to be good at persuasion, manipulation, you know, in advertising, you know, they call that being convincing. I was very good at the kind of the art of the deal and trading my life and skill for money.
Mm.
Now I have to come from a place of like, it's really got to mean something to me first or I won't put it out there. So it can't be for the reward, it can't be for like a monetary value, it's got to just, my heart's got to be in it, truly.
Mm-hmm.
Like there has to be a piece of my heart that goes out with it, and then I think it's worth doing. So yeah, that's value number one. And number two is, create no harm. It's kind of an Ahimsa style value, but maybe a bit adapted. I used to do myself and others a lot of pain in life, and I'm very much against that now. So kind of core value number two is whatever I do has to be done. I'm not like the most ethical person in the world. I'm still learning about all of that, finding my way through the kind of political side of, you know, what is right in the world when it comes to ethics and sustainability. But in terms of if there's visible harm being done in anything that I'm doing, I'll be against that. So it is trying to come from a really positive point of view. Kind of doing no harm is number two. Number three is, it's more of a statement than a value, but I think just having a sort of sense of like joy and grace and finding, you know, a path to peace in every moment. Like I think work as hard as you can, really push yourself, but don't lose the peace that you feel.
Yeah.
You know, peace is not something to get to. I think peace is something you always have to try and cultivate. Happiness comes and goes. So I'm not necessarily like, one of my values isn't to be happy all the time. I think struggle is real, and the right struggle is always the thing you should be doing. But if you can find some joy, find some grace, you know, act the right way, have some gratitude, you will always have peace.
Yeah.
You know, a person on their deathbed can have peace based on the life they've led and how they are in the moment. So it, again, that value kind of connects me to something a bit deeper than superficial emotion or reaction to things. So yeah, if there's joy and grace in my day, then I feel like I'm, you know, pieces in my platform, and it'll lead me to do the right things. And you know, maybe I'll be happy, maybe I'll be miserable. But I've had those things before, they've been alright. You know, we get through the day. So yeah, those are probably the three. Those are on the fly, by the way. You ask me tomorrow, I might change it, but hopefully not. Because of integrity, right? I'm not gonna change it. Yeah.
That's
okay.
Yeah.
If they change, they change, right?
That's it, yeah.
Okay. It's in the
moment. I think you have to give yourself space to evolve. Sort of spiritually, emotionally, you know, just as a person. So yeah, things may adapt around whoever I kind of see myself as being, but that feels pretty solid for now.
And one thing to add, you said you're like struggling, or not struggling, but figuring out your way, and you're like doing it on your own.
Yeah.
Remember, we're 41 people.
Oh no, for sure. Yeah, no, I definitely
face your fears.
The energy and the accountability. Now
I
put my shit out there.
You're not alone.
But no, you're absolutely right. You're all right. I mean, it is like a global network of really like-minded people, and that tribe. You know, I think I mentioned towards the end of the training that, you know, I am not really a family guy anymore. I'm pretty disconnected from my family. So family is important. You know, if I was more of a family guy, family would probably be a core value of mine. But I do have family, you know, through this. Like, that's one of the biggest things yoga's given me, actually, is, like I said, that community aspect is connecting with people that you couldn't, on the surface, be more different than. And yet something just bonds you to those people. Like, it really does. It breaks down barriers in unlike anything I've ever seen. Like, there's no social movement or political sort of doctrine or philosophy that's out there in the world at the moment that I think connects people quite like the simple practice of yoga does. Being one of two men in a sea of divine femininity, right, teaches you something about balance. I mean, it really does. Like, you know, where else does a man live in a world really operated and controlled and run and overwhelmingly populated by women? That's just not a thing.
Yeah.
But the balance was perfect,
yeah.
You know, and whether there are more men, less men, I think the same thing. So it teaches you something about sort of the polarities, the energy in a community, what really matters, you know, the world of, sort of politics and industry. And you know, socioeconomics is dominated by male thinking. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but it is pervasive, and it also seems to maybe be a cause of a lot of problems that we have. So the type of community that yoga presents, and the balance, or maybe the rebalance of the values and who holds them, just seems to be good for everyone. And yoga is for everyone. You know, I don't think anyone should be excluded. It is truly diverse. You know, if you have a human body and you breathe, whatever shape that body's in, you should get on the mat or find a form of, you know, a variety of yoga that suits you. So it is for everyone, and it does have the ability to create global community. And, you know, that probably sounds a bit wishy-washy and hippie, and it kind of is, but it just, it allows for so much within. Like, the practice and the philosophy is, you know, limitless, but the industry of yoga is also full of opportunities. So I see nothing but, you know, kind of comfort and opportunity in both of those, to kind of get everywhere around the world, meet every kind of person, be able to impact people. And I think all of us are connected by the idea that we want to do some good, want to help some people, and choose to help who you want to, you know, whoever you want. But I think yoga enables you to pinpoint and help many people. You know, whether it's the actual business of yoga or just the teaching that you adapted or embodied, that way of life, that practice, will sustain you whatever you choose to do. And it, yeah, it's just, it's a way of like, it's like a universal way of meeting and saying hello and finding something in common with every other person.
What are you right now grateful for?
Everything, honestly. Just the simplest things, I think. Just, you know, yeah, all the little things, just drawing breath, being alive, having a strong body, one that's going to, you know, get up and go to a class and leave later. And really just, yeah, I think the thing I am, like, I'm really happy at the moment. And like I said, happiness comes and goes, but I'm really content with not really wanting it right now. Like, that feels like being in the moment to me, where I'm just here. And I am, like, more than relaxed, you know. Obviously, I could say I'm on holiday, but yeah, there's a real sense of peace. I think I'm most kind of in love and grateful for that at the moment, is that sense of calm and peacefulness. That it's been a hard road getting here, but this all feels like the right place. And I trust that I don't know exactly what the next thing is, but I do feel drawn to doing certain things in certain moments that isn't, you know, necessarily inspirational or like a desperation. It's not on that scale. It's just the ability to kind of take a deep breath and feel something quite deep, and yeah, just go with that. I'm kind of grateful for the just the connectedness of the moment I'm in right now, because often you kind of strive for that. We struggle to find that connection. You have to go and do something, you know, whether it's positive or negative. You have to kind of go and affect your body and mind to get into a zone. This feels like a zone. And it's a bubble as well. You know, I kind of see it as a bit fragile. But yeah, if I'm grateful for anyone, for me, it is just that oneness at the moment.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, that's your lifetime story.
That's
amazing.
I love it.
Probably more to come. Maybe we'll do a part two in a couple of months or years.
I'm really curious what comes next in your life. Like,
me too.
Yeah.
Me more. I'm more curious than you, because I'm not sure. Yeah. Would be cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see what's, the next year is coming. Yeah.
Just keep up with all that what you just described. Yeah. It was so beautiful. And I think you're on a really, really beautiful journey.
Vielen Dank, dass du zu dieser Podcast-Folge mit Paul eingeschaltet hast. Ich hoffe, dass du auch so viele Aha-Momente hattest wie wir. Es ist immer wieder magisch zu hören, wie ein Mensch sich durch Yoga und Spiritualität um 360 Grad wandeln kann. Hast du auch eine Geschichte, die du teilen möchtest? Dann schau auf Instagram vorbei und hinterlass einen Kommentar oder schreib uns eine private Nachricht. Wir freuen uns, von dir zu hören. Bis zum nächsten Mal.